This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com for a free rate quote, and we're brought to you by TrueCar. When it comes to selling or trading in your car, you need to make good choices, and with TrueCar, you've got a star on your roster, so when you're ready to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar. True cash offer not available in all areas. I'm talking right now, and I feel like in my own ears, I sound like I'm about to die. Is my voice noticeably different, Danny G?
I just told Roberto and Ryan, who's filling in for Coop on the Maller Show, I was like, man, this is what Clay's going to sound like when he's like 62.
I don't know what's going on. Usually my voice feels pretty good. And I was watching Stranger Things 3 last night, and I was thinking, uh-oh, you know, my throat starting to feel a little bit weird here, but I'll probably be fine. And then when I woke up this morning, like I'm trying to talk right now, and I feel like my voice is just not making any noise, right? This is not a good sign. So I took that airplane flight back on Tuesday or whatever, and I feel like you always get sick on airplanes, and now it's what, Thursday? And I'm thinking to myself, uh-oh, is my voice going to be here on Friday? Like, this is a little bit of an alarming situation for me because I make a living off my voice, and I'm trying not to talk too loud, but I don't know. I'm filled with trepidation here. Did you watch Stranger Things 3 yet?
I have not, no.
Did anybody else watch Stranger Things 3 yet?
No.
What do you guys do with your lives?
I'm watching Breaking Bad right now. I've never seen that show in my life before, so.
Breaking Bad's not a bad movie. Is that still on Netflix?
Yeah, almost done.
I saw where they're taking Office and Friends off Netflix soon. But I'm sitting around watching Stranger Things 3 last night because I think last night is like the deadest night of the year for sports. And I didn't watch the ESPYs. Anybody watch the ESPYs?
No, I watched a documentary on HBO called I Love You, Now Die.
I watched the Dundies.
Oh, hold on a sec. What's the documentary you watch called?
I Love You, Now Die.
Well, that sounds alarming. What's that about?
A famous trial that took place back in 2017 where this girl, through text messages, convinced her boyfriend to commit suicide.
I read all about that. Yeah. Did she eventually go to jail or not?
Yeah, she's serving 15 months right now. Really good documentary.
Yeah, I remember reading about that. The guy committed suicide, right? And like she encouraged him to kill himself and said he needed to do it and all those things.
Yeah, they were boyfriend and girlfriend, but by text messages only.
Yeah, well, that sounds awful. The other thing I was doing is I was looking at the responses. Is Eddie Garcia there?
Yeah, he's here.
Why is he silent?
He was doing his update.
Uh-huh. So has he responded yet to the controversy from yesterday, which you put to rest by sharing the unedited version of him dropping an F-bomb during the update? Has he gone public with any kind of response yet so far?
I responded to your tweet.
Oh, really? I didn't see that. Yeah. What was your response to the tweet?
I said, don't let the facts get in the way of a good story. It may have sounded like I was saying a profanity that starts with the letter F, but
Geico,
I was mistakenly saying the Fox Sports Radio studios instead of the Outkick the Coverage studios. I stopped mid-Fox and...
But the O sounded like a U, though.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, and it also sounded like it ended with a CK.
No, it did not.
Yeah, I think it did. Well, did everybody hear? Is Dub there? Where's Dub? Or is Dub still asleep somewhere?
Good morning, Clay.
All right. So, Dub, have you heard the unedited audio that we shared yesterday?
I was here yesterday, so I did hear it live. And I remember. And like I said yesterday, it did sound
well,
like
hold
a
on.
Curse word.
Hold on a second.
See, now, that's true. It did sound like it, but...
Dub, you realize that Danny shared the actual unedited audio, right?
That's correct.
Have you heard it?
I have not listened to it since yesterday.
So why would you not have listened to what could be an integral part of the show that would have taken you literally 30 seconds to listen to?
You know, that's a fair question. And yeah. Here's what I'll do. At the first break, I'll go ahead and give that a few listens.
Oh, I appreciate you doing your job after the show actually starts. It's very helpful.
That's what I'm here for.
I was going to give Eddie a rough time about it, but I think I'm actually more upset that Dub hasn't given – don't you – like, Danny, shouldn't Dub have heard the audio that you shared?
Well, I did tag Dub on there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, you literally tagged the entire show in an integral element of what happened in yesterday's show. It takes 30 seconds to actually listen to it.
I'm kind of upset because I also sent Dub my mixtape, and yeah. I bet he didn't listen to that either.
And also, you made him that burner tape with all your favorite love songs, and I bet you didn't get a response on that one either.
No, Eddie got me in the mood for NWA yesterday, so I sent Dub a burner of all my favorite gangster West Coast songs.
That's one of the things, like, I almost have a nostalgic pain. Has anybody else on the show watched Stranger Things 3 yet? Any element of it?
I watched season 2. I have not started season 3 yet.
So season 3 is so insanely well done with and I asked this question last night on Twitter because I was curious, like, how many people out there are actually watching this thing in my audience. And it was a massive percentage of you out there. Like last night, because I couldn't sleep because I'm still all crossed over, in addition to the fact that I sound like I'm going to die with my voice. I was in L.A. for 10 days, so my time zones are all crossed up, so I can't fall asleep at a normal hour. So I'm sitting around watching Stranger Things, and then I put out this tweet, and 66% of my audience voted in a poll and said they either had watched or would watch Stranger Things 3. And I thought that was pretty wild to think about how popular that individual show is right now. And I'm not sure that there's anything else in the world of sports or pop culture that is as popular as this right now. Like, I don't think 66% of my audience watched the Women's World Cup, which we're going to get into Megan Rapinoe later in the show. And I don't think 66% of my audience watched, the Major League Baseball All-Star Game or anything else that will be popular so far this week. But the nostalgic factor on this, they built their own mall. And they set it up so that it looks exactly like a mall would have looked in like 1985. And so if you're old enough to remember a mall from 1985, it is like, it's amazing to watch. And as I'm watching this program, I'm sitting around thinking, okay, it has been, I guess the math is 35 years, basically 34 years since 1984, 1985. And you know, when you're a kid, it doesn't matter what happened before you. It seems like ancient history. And what I mean by that is we're about to have the 50th anniversary of man walking on the moon, right? When I was a kid, I was born in 1979. When I was a kid, 1969 seemed like it might as well have been 1878, right? Like, anything that happens before you are born seems like ancient history. And nowadays, you know, I'm sitting around and I'm talking to a large group of people. And when I think about the fact that the difference between 1985 and today is essentially the same as the difference between 1985 and, am I doing the math right, I think, on this, right? Like, this is just wild for me to even think about. 1960 and no 1950. What's the math here? 35 years before 1985 would be 1950, right? And my mind was blown. Like, I was just sitting around thinking, oh my God, like, we are so far removed from 1985 that we're as close now from this age as 1985 was, as when 1985 was going on, 1950 was. Like, the midpoint between 1950 and today is 1985. And I was just like, oh my God, like, how old am I getting? Because I'm watching this mall that they recreated, and it's got the, you remember the old mall stores? Like, it's got a JCPenney, and it's got like an Orange Julius, and it's got like all these stores that you just like hit you like a ton of bricks. Like, what was your favorite mall store in like 1985? Do you remember Danny G? Like, if you went to the mall and it was 1985 and you're a kid, what was your favorite place to go?
Well, we used to go into the Texas Instruments store in the mall because they had video game systems.
Right.
That you could buy and bring home, which outside of Atari, that was a new thing, obviously.
Yeah, like I remember the Radio Shack.
Free battery card.
Yeah. And I know Spencer's Gifts still exist, which is kind of amazing. But I remember my favorite thing, one of my favorite things being, do you remember like in the back they used to have those posters?
Yeah.
And the posters were all like old school, like crazy ass 1980s athlete posters. Right? Do you remember those?
Like where I do, yep.
Where the athletes were like all like, and they should bring those 1980s posters back. But it was like, you know, the athletes were all posed in ridiculous outfits, you know, like trying to show some sort of out of this world connotation, right? I mean, they really are wild. I wrote about this in my most recent book. And then they would have like scandalous photos of girls, right? Like posters of girls, like in very skimpy clothing. And so like that was a big deal. And I'm not finished with Stranger Things 3 yet, but I find myself just praying that there would be a scene where those kids would walk into the back of the mall. But when I was sitting there, does that blow anybody else's mind that it roughly right now, 1985 is as far from today as in 1985, 1950 was? Am I the only one who is blown away by that? Like, because when I think about being a kid, again, you go back to your own age and anything that happens before you is ancient history. But in 1985, we were as close to 1950 as we are in 2019 to 1985. It's wild. And the crazier thing than that is, I was looking this up because I was like, wow, how far back did the television show Wonder Years air? Wonder Years, if it were set today, it would be set in like 1995. So if you watched Wonder Years when you were a kid and it's set in the 1960s and you were like, man, this show, it seems like it was so long ago, and you would watch it with your parents and you had Fred Savage, Kevin Arnold and Winnie Cooper and Paul, and that was such an amazing show, but it seemed like it was set so, so long ago. If we were redoing Wonder Years right now, it would be set in 1997. And anyway, my mind has been blown ever since I started doing this math in my head. And I can't stop thinking about how wild that is, that that as I'm watching Stranger Things, it's so much of an ancient history because my 11-year-old is watching it. And to him, 1985 is like the equivalent of what World War II would have been to me. Almost. And my mind is just utterly blown over this fact. And now that I've made all of you who are watching Stranger Things feel like your ancient history, I'm going to go to break. I think my voice is going to survive. I think I'm going to make it through the show. We'll see. That could be an actual entertainment aspect. We have to set odds on whether or not I can finish the show. Up next, we're going to talk to Frank Isola. I'm going to dive into this Megan Rapinoe story sooner or later, maybe at the top of hour two. And open up the phone lines. In the meantime, I will talk with Frank Isola about Megan Rapinoe, about the Major League Baseball game, All-Star game, about Kawhi Leonard only guaranteed 2 years for the Clippers so that he pegs his contract alongside of Paul George, which I think is smart.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Welcome back in. Hope all of you are having fantastic Thursdays, wherever you may be across the entire country. Great pull on the music there as we roll back in. It's Animal Thunderdome time, but first I got to tell you, do it right. Save 5% every day by shopping at Lowe's, in-store or online. Save 5% on eligible purchases just by using your Lowe's Advantage card. Do it right for less. Start with Lowe's. Subject to credit approval. Cannot be combined with other credit offers. Exclusions apply. See store for details. U.S. only. Cue the music, boys.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls.
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I have a boa constrictor stuck to my face.
Sam, you have a what?
This is Animal Thunderdome.
So I know we've been talking about alligators like on the loose everywhere, but this one kind of blew my mind. In Chicago, Chicago police were called after someone called 911 saying they saw a Facebook post suggesting that there was a alligator living in the Humboldt Park Lagoon. They said, okay, we got to look into this. And they found a 4 or 5 foot alligator that was living in a Chicago lagoon inside of a park. They have amazingly, and we need to get this guy on the show. Did we get any response from Earthquake Lady? Have we officially put a request in for her?
I did. I put a request in yesterday afternoon.
All right. So I need you to now track down Alligator Bob from Chicago. He is their ultimate exotic animal trapper in Chicago, and he often helps animal control get them. Alligator Bob went out to go get the alligator in a canoe, and this is wild. They found alligators pretty consistently over the years, and this is including all the way back in 1905. They found 1902. Sorry. They found an alligator in Chicago. In 2010, they also found an alligator in the Chicago River. And in 2008, they also got an alligator. And finally, in 1953, they also found alligators. So Chicago alligators becoming a trend. Expectation is this was a former pet that someone released. But this happened in Pittsburgh. I mean, how many people have alligator pets? People need to get on this and dial it back. But we need to get Alligator Bob on to talk about all the people that he has found. Also, I got another one for you here that I think is wild. A woman stole a vehicle after throwing a snake at the driver. Then she got in the car, crashed through barricades, and this was in Greenville, South Carolina. Hilmary Moreno Berrios said that she demanded a woman's keys and threw a live snake at her. The woman gave her keys away. No figure. If you throw a snake at me and demand my keys, I'm probably going to get out of the car. The woman then she took the SUV and with the snake still in it. This woman's clearly insane. Drove into barriers and she's charged with carjacking, malicious damage to property, and 5 traffic violations. I assume that the snake was also a violation in some way. Snake wasn't venomous. It was in the car, but it was released into the woods. All right, what you got? Okay.
You'll like this headline. Missing Texas man appears to have been eaten by his 18 dogs, investigators say.
Oh, no.
The remains of a 57-year-old man missing since April were found recently on his Johnson County property. Apparently, he had been eaten by his dog, sheriff's deputy said. Investigators began finding pieces of bone and other human remains on Freddie Mac's property in King Cotton Road North there in Texas. Previously, family members had trouble stepping foot on the property because Mac's 18 dogs acted so aggressively toward them, the newspaper there reported. They say during the course of the investigation, it was found that Freddie suffered from serious medical conditions, so we will never know if the dogs killed Mr. Mac or just consumed him after he died from a medical condition.
Neither one of those sounds good to me.
Yeah. And why would you have 18 killer dogs that want to eat you?
Yeah, and if they won't allow your family on the property, that's probably a bad sign. I do find it interesting to know personally whether the dogs killed him or whether they ate him after he died. And how long it took him to eat him. You know, like everybody's like, oh, man's, you know, dog's best friend. But if dog gets hungry, how long till he eats you? If otherwise there's not a lot of food around. Won't take that long.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
live from the Geico Outkick Studios, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com for a free rate quote. And we're brought to you by TrueCar. When it comes to selling or trading in your car, you need to make good choices. And with TrueCar, you've got a star on your roster. So when you're ready to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar. True cash offer not available in all areas. Sometimes what happens in my industry drives me insane. There are so many pussy willows out there that are afraid to say what they actually think because they're afraid of blowback, that situations like what happened recently and what continues to happen with the U.S. women become trends and they become storylines and they're not based in any kind of objective reality. So let me dive in here with you. Let me explain why equal pay is absurd for the U.S. women compared to the U.S. men. Let me also tell you why I think Megan Rapinoe is not behaving in an intelligent fashion or even an honest fashion. And also why most of the time nobody else in sports will talk about either of these issues. But let's start here. Do you know what kind of revenue difference there is between the Men's World Cup and the Women's World Cup? Probably not. But let me tell you, in 2018, the U.S. men were a part of the Men's World Cup. If they had actually made it, they would have been part of a $6 billion business. The U.S. Men's World Cup in 2018 produced $6 billion, that's billion with a B, and in revenue. This past World Cup that just ended for the women produced $131 million in revenue. I want to repeat those numbers for you because your jaw may have just dropped. The Men's World Cup produced $6 billion with a B dollars of revenue. The Women's World Cup produced $131 million. Okay? On top of that, the Men's World Cup soccer players received 7% of the overall revenue their World Cup produced in payments. The women received 20% of the overall revenue their World Cup produced. So in the World Cup, I want you to listen closely to me right now. The women were not treated equally to the men. They received nearly three times as much money as the men, as a percentage of the revenue they produced. Now, this drives me insane. Everybody out there chanting equal pay and everything else, the U.S. women in soccer, when you look at the World Cup the revenue they produce, are like the WNBA compared to the NBA. The WNBA crowns a champion every year. The idea that WNBA players should receive the same pay as NBA players is insane. The U.S. women are a rounding error in their World Cup compared to what the men from the U.S. and other countries produce in their World Cup. That is an important detail that almost no one is talking about, and I bet you don't hear anywhere else, because we're in this upside-down universe where if you point out facts, people get all triggered, and they're like, oh, you're sexist. How come you don't like women's sports? I'm not saying I don't like women's sports. I'm just saying everything ultimately comes down to dollars and cents. It's the economy, stupid, as James Carville memorably said back in 1992, during the presidential election between George Bush and Bill Clinton. All right, are you following along there? This is wild, and you've almost seen it talked about nowhere. How many people have you seen weighing in on whether the U.S. women should make the same as the U.S. men? It all comes down to the revenue that you produce, okay? Furthermore, there is an illusion out there that somehow this is representative of women not being paid equally to men. This is just a lie. I don't know who's bought into this, but I get frustrated when people make up lies and they continue to propagate them. There is no wage gap in this country, okay? And this is how people tie it in to the U.S. women. They're like, oh, the U.S. women deserve more money than the U.S. men. No, they don't. Their sport is a pinprick of the interest level of the rest of the world when it comes to the World Cup. The U.S. is unique in that people actually pay attention to women's sports because we are actually a shining city on the hill when it comes to equality in this country compared to most of the world, especially as it pertains to women's sports, and I'm going to get to that in a minute. But I want to talk about this wage gap myth for a second. I understand that people have a variety of different opinions about how to address challenging situations that exist in our country, right? And I'll give you an example. Immigration is and always has been a difficult issue to reconcile in this country. You can have any variety of opinions out there listening to me right now about what we should do about immigration, right? What we should do about our southern border, what we should do about the amount of legal immigration we have, all of these different details. And I have my opinions and you have yours, and it's unlikely that we're going to solve any of those issues. But I think almost everyone out there would agree that our immigration system needs to be reformed in some form or fashion. And you can be of the opinion that that we need to build a wall, like Donald Trump, or you can be of the opinion that we shouldn't criminalize crossing the border like some Democrats. But either way, what you are acknowledging there is that there is a problem and that there is probably a better solution. And the fact that we have problems with immigration is not disputable, irrespective of your political party or your political persuasions. So we can differ on the respective opinions that people have about how to solve that problem without actually agreeing on the way to solve the problem, right? This equal pay argument, this wage gap myth, is totally made up. It isn't real. If you look at actual data, the U.S. women are trying to argue, oh, there's all these women. You're not being paid less. Women, if you adjust for education and years spent working, make nearly identical salaries to men. I went to law school. The majority of my law school class is female. Every single young lawyer who comes out and starts practicing law gets paid the same regardless of their sex. If you are a teacher in this country, if you are a state employee or federal employee in this country, you are all paid the same as men or women. The difference in salary, which exists and is a lie and has been exploited, and I don't know why people don't just point out these facts, is based on the number of years of work, which is almost 100% attributable to women taking years off because they decide to have children. I have a wife who has birthed three children. I would rather work than stay home with all three of my kids. I would. Some of you out there listening right now are men who stay home with your kid because ultimately, when you start to have multiple children, what often happens is you end up where I am and you're paying more for childcare than you would be for one of your spouses to not work. If you want to have a conversation in this country that's actually intelligent, we can talk about why childcare costs more than college. It costs me more to have my two youngest kids in daycare than it would have for me to pay tuition at the University of Tennessee for them to be in college. People talk about how expensive college is. I don't hear any tall politicians very often talking about ways to make childcare more affordable. But the reality is many couples out there that end up having multiple children ultimately decide that one of the parents will stay home with the children and the other one will go and be the primary breadwinner while those children are young. Oftentimes, the person who stays home with the children is a woman. And as a result, when that woman may well go back into the workforce later after her kids are in school, then she ends up making less than the man who is the same age as her that entered the workforce at the same time. But when you adjust salaries in this country for work years and for education and for whether or not childbirth occurred, there is no wage gap. So the women in the U.S. soccer team are selling you a lie. It just doesn't exist. In fact, their wage gap doesn't exist. If you look at the revenue that they produce, they are receiving three times as much money as men are. Why are they getting such a higher percentage of revenue? Because probably FIFA is so afraid of being called sexist that they are paying women more for less work than they are the men. All right. That is a big storyline there. Interlude before I go after Megan Rapinoe here. The U.S. women are good at soccer because of our global rights in this country that we bestow upon women. The men are much better soccer players. People lose their minds when they try and compare sexes when it comes to sports. Men are infinitely better at sports than women are. Doesn't mean women are bad. Just means that if, for instance, we had an Olympics and there was no distinction between men and women, women would never win any medals. Men are better at sports than women are. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're faster. If that bothers you, take it up with whoever created or however we evolved in society. Biology is sexist. Men are bigger, stronger, and faster. The U.S. women are good at soccer compared to other women. They lost head-to-head, the U.S. women did, with a team of 15 and under boys from the Dallas, Texas area. A good state high school champion men's soccer team would beat our U.S. women head-to-head. Let me repeat that. If you're in Texas or you're in Florida or you're in California and you are on a state champion, top-of-the-line, high school, really good boys soccer team, you would beat our U.S. women head-to-head. So people out there who are like, oh, our U.S. women are a lot better than our U.S. men, no, they aren't. If they played head-to-head, the U.S. men would be favored by 20 or more goals. This is like comparing apples and oranges. All right, Megan Rapinoe. I am fired up about this. Megan Rapinoe is being praised for refusing to meet with Donald Trump and refusing to go to the White House. And the usual suspects are all lining up in the sports media, and they're like, it's so brave of Megan Rapinoe to refuse to meet with Donald Trump. And she said she won't meet with Donald Trump because he excludes gay people and people like her, and therefore she finds it offensive, and therefore she will not speak with him. Now, this is important, right? Regardless of your political leanings, the entire purpose of protest for most of American history was about getting a seat at the table with people in positions of power, okay? If you study American history, the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King Jr. and everybody else involved in the civil rights movement protested because they wanted to be able to get civil rights. They wanted a seat at the table with American political leaders. Their protest had a purpose, and that purpose was to allow them to become a part of the political process. The goal of the protest was to meet with people that were excluding black people from the American political process. Megan Rapinoe, this is an important distinction that I don't think very many people have recognized. Megan Rapinoe is protesting Donald Trump and refusing to meet with him because he excludes people like her. Yet Trump, for all of the criticism that you may want to levy against him, is actually willing to meet with the U.S. women's soccer team. Megan Rapinoe has an opportunity to sit down with the most powerful man in the world and explain why what he is doing is excluding, in her opinion, people like her from feeling welcomed by the government. Why would you turn down the opportunity to meet with the most powerful man in the world and provide your impressions and suggestions that you think could make the country better? Instead, Megan Rapinoe has said she will only meet with politicians who already agree with her. Meeting with people you already agreed with is not politics. The entire purpose of politics is it's the art of the possible. Martin Luther King protested not so he could get a picture taken to put on Instagram or to put on Twitter or to put on Facebook with a hashtag so you look like a social justice warrior. He protested to change things. In order to change things, sometimes you have to meet with people you disagree with. In meeting with people you disagree with, guess what might happen? You might end up realizing that you actually have more in common with them than you thought. Politics is the art of the possible, not the impossible. Refusing to meet with people, which is what Megan Rapinoe and her ilk in the U.S. women's soccer team are doing, is not about trying to change anything. It's about being praised for being for refusing to meet. And this is an important thing, and I think people in the media, like me, I got a big audience, that's why I'm talking to you about this right now, are overpraising athletes for refusing to do anything. Think about it. Megan Rapinoe has an opportunity to meet with the most powerful elected official in the world in Donald Trump. If you question whether Trump can be influenced by meetings, look at what happened when Kim Kardashian and Kanye West went and met with Donald Trump. Kim Kardashian got a woman out of jail who would have got Trump to pardon this woman. And whether you love or hate him, Trump has implemented the most significant criminal justice reform by a president in generations, which will theoretically allow people serving nonviolent prison sentences to be released by the federal government. That's because people were willing to meet with him to make their arguments. This idea that you should just be angry all the time and you should refuse to interact with anybody who doesn't have your exact same opinion is not democracy, it's totalitarian government-inspired decision-making. Megan Rapinoe is not a hero, she is a coward. She is refusing to actually meet Donald Trump on the battlefield of ideas and see if they might have something in common which could lead to betterment for her particular worldview. And this is not just about Megan Rapinoe. This is going on right now across the country. We have embraced the illusion that merely criticism, merely protest without the intent of actually following through is something to be praised. Protest without an attempted solution is just about you getting a hashtag and a picture to put on social media. Finally, this is a big issue everywhere. Joe Biden, who I like, who I voted for twice, is running for president right now. He got ripped for saying that he worked with segregationist senators. That's his job. He was in the Senate. He's not going to agree with everyone. We need to realize that in order to function as a society, sometimes You have to interact with people you disagree with. Guess what you also learn? People who disagree also have a lot of things that they agree about. What disappoints me about Megan Rapinoe and others like her in this political process is we are praising them for doing absolutely nothing and for only preaching to the choir of the converted over and over and over again. Megan Rapinoe had an opportunity on the international stage to actually make some really smart and cogent and intelligent political points. She could have spoken to the globe and said, you know what? You might be angry about the way the U.S. women are celebrating, and you might be angry about the fact that we are winning, but do you know that if you just look at the Women's World Cup bracket, every team that is winning, irrespective of who the players are on those teams, it's the country where women have the most rights. Instead of criticizing the United States and saying, I'm not going to the effing White House, Megan Rapinoe should have been smart enough to realize that the reason why the U.S. women are so good at soccer is because they have freedoms, women do, in this country, unlike anywhere else in the world. In Saudi Arabia, I just saw this morning when I woke up, news alert, women in Saudi Arabia are now allowed to travel without chaperones. They are now allowed to drive cars. In Iran, women are now allowed to go watch sporting events. It used to be only men allowed in their stadium. But women in Saudi Arabia still have to play soccer wearing pants and wearing a hijab. That is, the only thing you can see is their eyes. Is it any wonder that in countries where women just got the right to drive cars and where they still have to play in pants and hijabs, that we would actually be better at soccer than they would? You had this huge global stage, Megan Rapinoe. You had an opportunity to advance American exceptionalism and point out that the reason why our women's soccer team is so damn good is because of all the rights that women have in America, and that those rights should exist for all women in the world as well. You had a platform and everybody could have paid attention to you. What did you choose to do? Insult Donald Trump instead. You could have raised up the national discourse and made America what it is, a city on a hill that everybody else in the world should be aspiring to reach, because that's why our women are so good. Our women are so good because this country is so wealthy that we can afford for our citizens to pay thousands of dollars a year so their daughters are good at a sport in a time when women across much of the world have no rights, have no education, have no Title IX, have no ability to play sports. You could have pointed out American exceptionalism and held your team up as an example for the rest of the world, and instead you decided to drag down our president and our country and make us look bad on the national stage. It disgusts me. It really does. And in the process, most people in the American sports media know what they did. They praised Megan Rapinoe and said she's a hero. All she did was drag down our country and refuse to meet with anybody she disagrees with. Exclusion? Ironically enough, Megan Rapinoe said Donald Trump was excluding people, yet she excluded the possibility of even meeting with him, which makes her one of the worst things I think that exists in America today, an absolute unvarnished hypocrite.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Car shopping can be confusing with terms like dealer price, list price, and invoice. TrueCar shows you what other people paid for the car you want so you can recognize a good price when you're ready to buy a new or used car. Visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. It's a confidence show, although I got to be honest, I'm not that confident in Eddie's ability to get through updates now without dropping F-bombs. This is a real rattle, real attack, real difficulty, real obstacle in our relationship. Let's see how he does.
It does add an element of danger now that people are paying attention
intrigue.
A little closer, I think.
Intrigue, for sure.
Let's start with news from the NBA, where the details of the Kawhi Leonard contract with the LA Clippers reportedly has him agreeing on a three-year deal worth $103.1 million. It includes a player option after the second year. That means that Leonard, along with new star teammate Paul George, who the Clippers also just acquired, will be eligible to be free agents together in 2021. That's when George's four-year deal he signed last season with Oklahoma City will expire. George also with a player option in the final year of his deal. College basketball, the NCAA delivered a notice of allegations that charges the North Carolina State men's basketball program with level one violations. The allegations allegedly occurred under former head coach Mark Gottfried. He's now the head coach at Cal State Northridge. And if true, it could jeopardize his standing with that school. Tennis at Wimbledon, Hall of Famers-to-be Novak Djokovic, Rafael Nadal, and Roger Federer all advancing to the Wimbledon semifinals for the first time since 2007. Nadal and Federer will go head-to-head in one of those semifinals. Online car shopping can be confusing, but not anymore with True Price from TrueCar. Now you can know the exact price you'll pay for your next car, so visit TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. We'll be back to Outkick the Coverage in 10 seconds, but first, a word from Farmers.
At Farmers Insurance, we know a roof can withstand a lot. One exception being an airborne car. Seen it, covered it. Talk to Farmers.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Underwritten by Farmers Truck Fire Insurance, exchanges and affiliates. Products not available in every state.
Now back to Clay Travis in the Geico Outkick the Coverage studios.
Good stuff, as always. He managed to not create a disaster there. We are joined now, I believe, by Frank Isola. You can listen to him on SiriusXM. You can read him at The Athletic, and you can watch him on Around the Horn. He is at the Frank Isola on Twitter. Frank, did you watch the ESPYs last night?
I just watched a little bit of it.
So,
not too much.
So, have you watched Stranger Things 3? Do you watch Stranger Things on Netflix?
No.
So, this time of year, what do you do? Like, because I bring that up because, like, so much of the year, if you talk or write about sports or you're a big sports fan, there are easy things that you're set already, like, locked in to watch, right, on some level. What did you do last night? Like, how did you pass your time? It's the deadest sports day, basically, of the year, right?
Yeah, I came back from Las Vegas. I'd been out there for summer league. So I was a little tired. So I watched a little bit of the summer league last night, and then I passed out. That was it for me.
All right, wild night for you, too.
That was my TV viewing experience.
Exactly. Yeah, I was sitting watching Stranger Things 3 up way too late last night. But you were out in Vegas. Were you there for the earthquake?
No, I got there just after the earthquake hit.
So, and also, you probably had to be thinking, like, I can't wait to get to Vegas to see Zion. And then Zion gets injured a little bit and decides to get held out. So what to you was the storyline, or what did you pick up out in Vegas?
Well, that kind of is the storyline. It's funny, right? I said it's like kind of like typical NBA. You got a guy like Zion Williamson and all this hype around surrounding him. They sell out the first game. He doesn't play that much. He didn't play that great. He's got ice on his knee. They shut him down. And, of course, last night, he shows up at the ESPY Awards to get some award for, like, I guess it was best college athlete.
Right.
Which is so great. The summer league's still going on, but he's out in L.A. getting an award. That's what I like.
And looking completely healthy, right? I mean, like, it didn't look like he was any worse for wear. All right, so I know you are you've got daughters who play, I think, college-level soccer. So you've been well plugged in to the women's soccer movement for a while. What did you think of the U.S. women's run, and what did you think of their celebration yesterday? And last night, they were at the ESPYs as well.
It's amazing how much traveling they've done in, like, the last few days. They were the favorites to win the tournament. So they went in, and to their credit, you know, any challenge that was ahead of them, they faced. You know, I thought, it's funny. I think when you win, you're kind of allowed to get away with anything. And I thought, I didn't like the way that they acted in the games against Thailand when they scored goals 10, 11, 12, 13. I thought that was over the top. It's just, I always find it funny that, you know, I think we should reach a point now in women's sports where we're allowed to be critical of certain things that they do. It's not a referendum that we don't like women's sports or that they should be above criticism. I thought the way that they played, absolutely, they were very good against France, probably caught a bit of a break with the handball not being called, caught a bit of a break against England, when the goal was called offside, which would have tied the game. And, of course, they saved the penalty kick, which is fine. Everybody, luck happens in every sport. But, you know, to me, they were the best team. They proved it. And, you know, Megan Rapinoe obviously became the big star. I didn't agree with everything that she said and did. They certainly were drinking it up pretty well. I mean, every time you saw them, they landed at Newark Airport. It looked like they had been drinking. You see them yesterday at the parade. Everyone, I guess the whole team is kind of like the Rob Gronkowski of women's soccer.
So I thought this was intriguing. The U.S. men basketball team, you're old enough to remember, and crazily, a lot of people who are listening to this right now aren't, the 1992 Dream Team.
That's right.
And I was saying I was watching Stranger Things, and, you know, 1992, for some of our audience, might as well be 1962, right? Like, it's so long ago to some of our audience, which is wild to me. But the Dream Team comes around in 1992, and basically since the Dream Team, the U.S. men's basketball team has dominated in all international competitions. If you were betting right now over the next 20 years, which will be more dominant, the U.S. men in basketball or the U.S. women in soccer? And the reason why I bring it up is there is an element, I believe, of the Dream Team kind of vibe that now is following our women's soccer program. Which do you think is more likely to remain dominant as the rest of the world is starting to compete at a higher level, I think, in every iteration, right? I don't know when the U.S. might not be the best in the world in basketball, as long as the team gels and everything else and they do a good job of selecting it. But which do you think over the next generation is more likely to be dominant, the men in basketball or the women in soccer?
I still think it'll be the men in basketball. I was at the Olympics in 2004 when the U.S. lost three games. They lost to Puerto Rico, believe it or not. They lost to Lithuania. And then, of course, in the semifinals, they lost. They ended up losing to Argentina. So, they have lost before, but that team had all kinds of issues. The women's soccer, the one thing about it, if you look at the sport itself, especially in places like Europe, technically, they're getting a lot better than we are. If you go back to, like, 8 years ago, 12 years ago, the one thing about the U.S. women's team, we were so much more athletic, and we would win games by just being kind of bullies, and we're still kind of doing that in some ways, but I just think the rest of the world, you could just see it. It's happening already in Europe with teams like the Netherlands, Italy. Like, they weren't really anything 8 years ago. They're kind of catching up, so I think that part of it. For whatever reason, we're just so much more athletic than everybody. France was kind of close. I thought Sweden was kind of close. But I think the rest of the world is going to – I think in women's soccer, they're going to catch up. Maybe this it'll be very interesting to see what's going to happen 4 years from now. I think it could be – you know, you talk about 20 years from now. I'm going to be interested to see how much closer the rest of the world is 4 years from now. I don't even know where the World Cup is in 4 years. But I think you could tell that the gap is closing.
Do you think that that the interest in the U.S. women, with that in mind, is attributed primarily to the fact that they win or to an overall increase in the amount of interest of soccer in general? And the reason why I ask that, we go back in time 20 years. I feel like that run, which took place in the United States in 1999, was iconic. And many of the girls that are on the team now were, you know, really little girls then, right? They're like 5, 6, yep, 7, 8 years old, by and large. Some of them are older. I think Rapinoe's like 34. So she was maybe 14 or whatever, like already playing soccer at a high level. But I feel like that 1999 run in many ways spurred this level of dominance a generation later. Is there a group of kids out there watching now who will play at a higher level 20 years from now? Or basically, has the sport gotten so big, it's hard to find that many more people who could go out and play going forward?
No, I think there'll definitely be an increase in popularity. And you know this, too, because of Title IX. Look at like places like the SEC, where only a few teams have a men's soccer team. But because it's so great in football, and you know they build these unbelievable soccer stadiums for the women's team. So at the college level, and as long as the coaching keeps better, you know, there's always going to be players out there, and I think we'll continue to get better. But Here's the thing about the youth soccer in this country. You go to places, you know, it's in our country, basketball is kind of seen as a street game. And, you know, you find kids in, you know, inner cities in a playground playing. You go to places like Brazil, you know, you get poor kids are playing soccer. In our country, the rich kids play soccer.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
It's really, you know, an affluent sport where it costs a lot of money, you know, to travel and everything like that. And it becomes, it's not an inclusive sport yet. In the U.S., it's becoming, you know, slowly but surely, but it's it's a money-making proposition for a lot of companies. You get guys coming over from England, Spain, Italy, France, who coach and develop these clubs in local towns, and they go into these rich towns, and you have people paying, you know, $1,800 a year just to play soccer. A lot of families can't afford that. So in other parts of the world, it's more of a street sport. In our town, I mean, in this country, a lot of times, it's like lacrosse and swimming and golf and tennis. You got to have money in order to play it.
Yeah, it is utterly, and I've talked about that a lot on this show, is the difference in the way that soccer is kind of an elite rich kid sport still in many ways in the United States compared to basketball and football, which it seems like, and even baseball, maybe kind of the middle ground, where it seems like it's played by the masses. And I'm curious, that ties in with a question that I bet you've gotten a lot, because there are a lot of people out there who are not big soccer people, and they look at our women's success and they say, why are our women so much better than the rest of the world and our men are so average against the rest of the world? What do you say to those people? Because I bet you've gotten that question too, given the fact that your daughters play at a high level.
Well, the rest of the world had a huge head start on us, and that's, you know, and all over the world do they play the sport. Like, look at, you know, with soccer, these teams and on the women's side in South America, Brazil's got a good team, not a great team. Argentina is all right. But the rest of, like, South America at the women's level, like, you know, they don't have Title IX in those countries. And women don't have the opportunities in South America like they've had here for the last, you know, 20, 40, 50 years. So that's why I think, you know, the women's sport in the U.S., we've invested more money in development and an opportunity. And that's really the reason why. I mean, we have good male players in this country, but in other parts of the world, where it's weird too. It's almost like in your DNA when when a lot of these kids, if you live in Belgium, chances are when you're a kid, you're going to be steered right to soccer. Where in our country, depending on where you are in certain regions of the country, you might play basketball or you might, I mean, think about, you live in the South. Think about how big college football is.
Yeah.
Young kids down there, when they're growing up, they're not dreaming of playing soccer. They're dreaming about playing football because it's around them all the time. I think that has a little bit to do with it as well. There's more sports for guys to play. Not our best athletes don't always play soccer. I mean, imagine if, like, Russell Westbrook, when he was growing up, was steered towards soccer. Having a guy who was like 6'3" who could run like that and is as intense as that, what he would be. Now, you hope he would pass the ball a little bit more in soccer than he does in basketball. But the point is, we don't have a lot of, all the time, our best athletes playing where they do in other countries.
You are in New York City, and we're talking to Frank Isola. You can watch him on Around the Horn. You can listen to him on Sirius XM, and you can read him at The Athletic, at The Frank Isola on Twitter. You just mentioned Westbrook. What is now the fallout as free agency has taken place in the NBA? The Knicks have not managed to sign anybody of any real substance. Brooklyn obviously waiting now to see how quickly Kevin Durant can come back from his rehab. But when you look at Russell Westbrook, for instance, who you just mentioned, do you think the Knicks make a big run at him? Do you think that there is that desire there to go get a star? Or where do you think Westbrook ends up? Because I do think it's pretty clear in the wake of Paul George's departure and all the draft picks that they've added that his time in Oklahoma City is coming to a close sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and that's the thing with the Knicks. They would probably have to wait until December 15th. That's when, you know, guys that you signed the free agent contracts are then eligible to be traded. I think that Oklahoma City wants to get something done sooner than that. And I think you know this. You know, Sam Presti has a good relationship with Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook, you know, for better or worse, is the best player in the history of the franchise, most popular player. They did trade James Harden. They, you know, Kevin Durant ended up leaving as a free agent. I think they want to leave on good terms with Russell Westbrook. They also want to get a good deal for themselves. So you know, would they just leave him? Nothing against the Detroit Pistons, but would they trade him to Detroit, where maybe that's not where Russell Westbrook wants to go? I think Miami is a team that wants Russell Westbrook. I think that's where he would want to go. So I think they're going to try to placate him as best as they can. But he should be. It makes no sense at this point. I give Oklahoma City a lot of credit. I think that was a smart trade they made for Paul George. I think they got a lot back. And, you know, that team has gone as far as it could. And Russell Westbrook's got a lot of money. And you look at the way that he played, it's weird. He had a triple-double last year, but he shot 66% from the free throw line. You know, he still kind of has that. He still wants to do a lot of things on his own. And now you've had Paul George asked to be traded, and Kevin Durant left him. You know, you could dress that up any way you want, but those are the simple facts. If Paul George thought he could win a championship with Oklahoma City, is he asking to be traded? And I know Paul George got offended by people saying it was a reflection on how he might feel about Russell Westbrook. How can you not, like, consider that? I mean, if he thought he could win with Russell Westbrook, I doubt he's asking to be traded. He clearly, you know, wants his money. He wants L.A., and he probably on some level wants to get away from Russell Westbrook. I just don't know. It's almost like Russell Westbrook, yeah, he's going to put up great numbers, but it's almost like a report card for like a third grader. It does not play well with others. I think that kind of applies to him.
Where were you on the Kawhi news? Were you awake or were you already in bed? And do you think it's significant that he's only committing for 2 years, which is the same length of time that Paul George is under contract as well? This makes what the Clippers did even more of a risk, right, in many respects, because they only have this duo now committed for 2 years.
Yeah, and then, of course, like that gets him to that 10th year. So if he re-signs after 10 years, he can get more money. I do think more of it is it's more financial than anything. But today's NBA players, you know, they're independent contractors more than ever, and that's their right, obviously. But I think for fans need to realize there really is not a lot of loyalty anymore on either side. And I think that's, you know, clearly true with Kawhi Leonard. This is about, you know, making more money 2 years down the road, but also keeping his options open if things don't work out in LA. I like the move that he made. If he was going to leave, I wanted him to stay in Toronto. The fact that he left and didn't go to the Lakers, I thought that was good for the league. I think it was good for Kawhi Leonard. Because my thing to the Clippers would have been, if you were meeting with Kawhi, and I'm sure Kawhi Leonard is a lot smarter than I think a lot of people give him credit for. Winning with the Lakers would have helped LeBron's legacy. Not winning with the Clippers, think about what that's going to do for Kawhi Leonard. I mean, he won with the San Antonio Spurs with that great, he kind of carried, you know, all those old guys, Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker, to one more title. You go to Toronto, for crying out loud, never been to a finals. You win an NBA championship there for an entire country. And then if you go to the Clippers, you know, the Clippers have never been, forget about an NBA final. They've never been to a conference final before. So if Kawhi Leonard could go and win there, then you are talking about him in the conversation with greatest of all time. And I thought it was great because it kind of knocked LeBron back a little bit. It you know, helps the balance of power in the NBA. And I think it's going to make, you know, the regular season more entertaining, even though we know that the NBA players can't stand playing in the regular season. But at least now, there's something to look forward to even before the playoffs start.
Outstanding stuff as always, Frank Isola. I appreciate the time. We will talk to you again soon. Good luck enjoying the quiet season up in New York.